to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lori, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Dixieland's a playing, soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
If you like music and you like podcasts and you like to laugh and you like to learn, you need to immediately subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Each week on the One Hit Thunder podcast, we dive deep into the story and back catalog of a one-hit wonder band or artist. From there, we have a good, healthy discussion as to whether they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit wonder. We have a huge back catalog, and we've done episodes on everything from Don't Worry, Be Happy and the Macarena to King of Wishful Thinking and Cumbersome. I promise you're going to love the show more than Jaquan loved getting tipsy, and even more than Bobby Boris Pickett loved making alternate versions of the Monster Mash. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your podcasts.
Aha! Hello, everybody. Welcome to my living room. Sorry to interrupt here, but I just got my pirate satellite transmitter hooked up, and I just wanted to try it out for a little while. So from now on, we're going to be playing the videos that I want to watch. So just sit back and relax, because this is Owl TV!
All right, Matt, we have just finished breaking down all of In 3D, and after this album came out, a tradition that lasted for close to 10 years, maybe even more than 10 years, honestly, was unleashed upon the world, and that was Owl TV, which he did twice before the Dare to Be Stupid album came out.
Yeah.
And I think to break down something that is just filled with some of the strangest, most abstract sketch comedy imaginable, there was only one person that we could possibly bring on this show to join us.
Yeah.
Patrick of Smosh, thank you so much for joining us over here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so, so thrilled. I can't tell you how big an honor this is. I have such a deep, deep love and affinity for Weird Al. I'm thrilled. I can't wait.
I have seen highlight reels of Owl TV stuff, and there's like two or three moments out of these two episodes that like distinctly I know I've seen a million times.
Yeah,
I was not prepared for how crazy these were going to be. I was texting Matthew earlier and was like, this thing is either just home runs or whiffs with no middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was shocking. I finished watching this like seconds before we started recording this, because it was like, it was longer than I thought it was, actually, the two together. I mean, it's on YouTube, so for people listening to this, you can look this up on YouTube. We did note that it seems like a section of episode two is missing.
I'm assuming it got pulled for copyrights. I'm sure there was like an audio clip.
Whoever put this up on YouTube was smart enough to cut the music portions out of the episode. So generally there's no copyright flags, but it seems like some part is missing. But even still with that, even with the videos removed, I don't know how much, like, each episode is, like...
They're about 45 like, minutes.
About 45 minutes to. Each, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Each section, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right about an hour, yeah. Uh-oh, I'm getting a phone call.
Uh-oh.
I gotta go.
I'm just kidding. Well, that wraps up LTV.
So the first one makes sense, right? The first one debuts April Fool's Day, 1984.
Yes, I did plot it was April Fool's Day. I didn't notice that at first, but then I saw...
Yeah, like, let's give Al the airwaves for, I believe, about 3 hours-ish with commercials and music videos.
Yeah.
First big chuckle out of me was just him doing the rocket sounds as they played the footage of the first, like, the launch that is infamously the MTV kickoff thing. Just the noise that he's making. And
it's
just the music choices and sound effect choices alone in these are absolutely brilliant.
It's incredible.
Now they play that rocket like 7 times in the videos that we watched. So at a certain point, I was skipping a little bit. But
you guys are the official historians of Weird Al currently, right? You guys are like the you know everything.
I'm not ready to take that title at this point. Yeah. But when the podcast is over, yes,
this is it. This is you guys going to be the ones.
Yeah.
So he's what is his age? Is he like 24 here?
He's definitely young as hell. I
did a little bit of math. I think he's either 23 or 24, which is so cool to me that it feels like a 24-year-old was given a television show is what this feels like. And like knowing that it's Weird Al is cool.
I think you're right. I just did the math myself. I think he was 24.
The tone that this reminded me of was when I was a kid, I loved watching E! Talk Soup back when it was the John Henson years where there was no live audience. And it was just the awkwardness of him telling these jokes, and you would like maybe hear the cameramen and lighting guys chuckling a little bit.
Right,
but like, it just felt so lo-fi and like not what you're used to seeing when you see comedy being performed on television, because it's usually like a live studio audience at that time, or like something. It's SNL, it's Mad TV, like it's in front of something. So for there to just be this abstract weird comedy with silence behind it the whole time is so jarringly weird.
It's so great.
It feels very off the cuff, which I mean, he's presenting it like it's off the cuff. Like I love, like in the first episode, I had not seen before, I don't think, the setup that he literally has hacked MTV with his fake satellite thing, like a pirate radio system, and he has like hacked into their broadcast, and then as a result it is like him sitting at his table just being like, I don't know, what should we watch, like
his one line
is
really just goes,
wild to see.
He goes, boy, that sure was a video there.
I did love the fact that it's clear in certain moments he knew what video was before, but in other moments he was just like like any sort of generic thing, like, well, absolutely, thank you for that video.
I feel like it definitely felt like off the cuff and very like loose. It felt like any bit goes, but it felt like he sat down and was like, I have to plan an hour where I'm talking to the camera. Like that was a lot of jokes and a lot of segments that he made. Like, and he has a hamster and he has props and he has that, that TV that he, like the manual TV with the news where instead of a screen, it's like paper and like it screws up a bunch of times.
That was when they were struggling to get it was the ABBA and Costello bit. They were struggling to get the sheet into the shot, and it's such a great the some of the wordplay in this is so good, and specifically focusing on the first one right now, there was two big word plays that killed me in this during his news segments. The one was about the Barbra Streisand movie about a bear that wants to become a Jew, and it was called Yentl Ben.
Yentl Ben, I wrote that down. I like that a lot too.
I love Yentl Ben.
And then the Elvis Costello ABBA tour, the ABBA and Costello tour, but they're not sure who's gonna play first just yet. Like, I was like,
insane,
so good, just like rapid fire one-liners and puns.
I would, for what it's worth, I would without a doubt go to that show. That's a great double bill. That's like, he's making it like a joke. I feel like that would be a ridiculous tour, but I'm like, sign me up.
Especially in 84.
I am into it. Oh my God.
Yeah, you're getting all the hits of Costello and none of the like latter years.
I'll even take Elvis Costello and the ABBA holograms on tour, if that's what it takes 1,000%. At this point. Whatever it takes, I'll take it.
And Patrick, I have holograms. To point out, you mentioned that there was a hamster. That wasn't just any hamster, sir. That was the debut of Harvey the Wonder Hamster. Yeah,
I audibly gasped to myself alone in my living room. I was like, oh my God, that's the first sighting of Harvey. That's incredible.
When he said, I have a hamster here, it's the only thing in my notes that is in all caps. Debut of Harvey the Wonder Hamster.
Because he's in Harvey the Hamster is in UHF too, right?
I don't know if he made it to UHF, but he was a main character on the Al TV show from the 90s, and he wrote a song about him on the Al Palooza record too.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the Weird Al show.
Wow, yes.
It's weird because they are similar, but they are like it's two different. Al TV is this, which is like the music video thing, and then the Weird Al show came later.
More I have show. Right. No clue when we get to the late 90s and we hit the era that show aired on. I don't know if I have it in me to watch the entire run of that show, but maybe we'll just do like a history of.
It'll be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I don't. To be honest, I don't even know how many episodes of Weird Al show ran. I know I've seen
a lot
of it.
Couldn't be more than two seasons.
Right.
There was no way it was more than two seasons, so it couldn't have been too long. But, so he does a couple giveaways. The first one he does is the Weird Al's Lost Weekend getaway, which is that he will basically kidnap you and drop you in the desert where you will be lost for a weekend trying to find your way home.
Yeah, I love that.
Years ago, this is like potentially a huge tangent, but we're not gonna go down it. We're gonna be tempted to, but we're gonna ignore it. Years ago, I used to do this like really intense, like full contact haunted house where you had to sign a waiver first and people would like throw bags over your head and push you into closets and stuff. And Al's description of his lost weekend really reminded me of that.
Did you work at McKinley Mansion? What the hell are you talking about?
No, not McKinley Manor. I did Blackout.
I know Blackout.
I could do a whole other podcast just talking about Blackout.
I was going to say, I went to one of those, two immersive haunted houses called the 17 Door in Tustin. Did you ever go to that one?
No.
They rubbed a fetal pig on my face. It was That was and I have a group text. I don't talk to those people anymore, but every now and then somebody texts that group and says, it was a dead baby pig. And that's all we say to each other every year. Because we're still traumatized from it.
Yeah, those events are insane. But then I thought, watching Al pitch it, I'm like, he was ahead of his time. He didn't really, there actually is a market for this type of thing. People are interested. They want to be abandoned in the desert. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
Him hitting the conspiracy theory stuff to me.
Oh my God.
I mean, that was already happening in the 80s, but it felt very of the now. It felt very real and relevant in a weird way.
I know I'm jumping ahead, but since we're talking about giveaways, can we talk about possibly the joke that aged the worst in this entire bit, which is when he's talking about the requirements for the Al's one night stand and he starts with applicants must be 12 years or older.
Oof.
And I was like, ooh. I could feel the gust of wind from that whiff.
Oof. Yeah. It is. I mean, so all of this stuff, I mean, it is shocking now to watch this and see him making so many, essentially sex jokes about he has the joke about send me your fan mail, and he takes out a Polaroid that he says is a woman topless.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, the competition for best breasts was last week, sorry, but I'll hang on to this, and puts it in his pocket. I had seen portions of this before, but I have never seen so much of him delivering that kind of material. It's just wild to see him be so for him, as edgy as I have ever seen him.
Yeah,
and
this is the most blue he's ever
MTV.
Been.
I was going to say, I'm assuming that has a lot to do with 80s MTV, where MTV at the time was so, we are pushing the envelope. We want to be at the cutting edge of all of this stuff. And he was fitting in his own way as best he could. I don't, this is the nature of comedy. We've talked about it before. We will talk about it again, that some of these things just do not age well. Some things age really well, some things don't. And a lot of this type of stuff is really wild to hear him say.
Yeah, it he does such a course correct in the later years. I mean, he goes so absurd and stays jokey. And that's why to me, it's like he's a 24-year-old. This feels like a college show to me. This is him finding his voice and playing around. And that's why I'm fascinated by it, because I want to see That's what I'm obsessed with, is like seeing people before they have their voice. Like, I love
seeing
somebody who doesn't quite know where they are and they're doing sticking. Like, one of my things that I've hosted a podcast similar to this podcast about Jimmy Buffett for about 7 years. And I dove really hard into Jimmy Buffett, and I looked into everything, and that actually ended up getting me a job on Radio Margaritaville, and I'm a DJ on that as well. Friday nights.
Nice.
Come check me out.
Wow.
But that's the kind of person that, like, he really took a long time to find his, like, what he did, and there's a lot of experimenting and stuff. But he's the same way. Al is, like, incredible in that regard, because he clearly finds what sticks and he follows that from here into the next thing. But it's cool, because, like, that didn't work, and he leaves it, and then he goes with whatever he's doing, and he keeps on with Harvey, which is clear.
Yeah, well, because, like, you know, Patrick, you obviously are more ingrained in the comedy world than Matt and I are, but I think that Matt and I are both big lovers of comedy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's nothing more than, like,
totally.
Listening to your favorite comedian's first open mic nights. It's they're figuring it out still.
Exactly.
And this is only a year and a half into him having any ounce of fame. He's still figuring out what is Weird Al, and also, like, what is his personal ethos about what he's doing. I talk about the one podcast I've been doing for 8 years now, the Horror Movie Night. I was just at a horror convention handing out cards, and we made these little horror movie trading cards. Every year we make a new set of them that are like, here's 6 movies that we covered this year that you should start at. And part of it is like, don't start on our first 2 years when we were like dudes fresh off of Reddit that just thought that we had the edgiest humor in the world before we saw how fucked up people are treated in real life and realized like maybe like punching down isn't the ideal way to do comedy right now.
Truly. I mean, there's so many people that have the luxury too of their early years are not recorded. Not nowadays anymore. Like, I mean, everybody has their early stuff online forever, which is a curse. But it's funny that Al, like, this is essentially scrubbed, except for somebody who had a really lucky VHS tape that he put on YouTube and was smart enough to keep the copyright out.
I was going to say exactly that. When we started watching it, the first thing I thought, I'm like, wow, I cannot believe this only exists in such low quality. But then as it played, I was like, I get it.
Yeah.
And now I understand. This is not like, there are portions of this. And like you, Matt, I think I had seen like a best of moments of Al TV over the years, because you can consolidate it down to some of these, like, the finer moments. And again, as this goes on, he starts to hit, especially in the later years, some real, like, critical, like, very, very popular things he has done in this context. But in this time period, I mean, a lot of this is, I mean, I'm sure if you were Al and MTV was like, we want to re-release Al TV, you'd be like, that's okay. You don't have to.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of the most iconic moment from the first episode is the toast. Like, I've seen that clip 1,000 times where he pops out the toast that has his name burned in it and starts singing like the MTV notes as he's using Cheese Whiz to spray the TV onto it. Like, that's such a simple bit. But that, again, like you were saying, Patrick, like, that feels like in the moment he's like, can we get a piece of toast and put my name in it and I'll just like do this thing real quick? Like, you can almost tell what was the written punny stuff and what was the just like throwing shit at the wall and deciding if it was going to be funny enough.
Absolutely. And I know we'll get to it, but like the Boy George thing, that's the thing that I'd seen before I watched this. And the out of context interviews are clearly like, and I would love to know if other people had done those up to this point, or if those were like, if that was a thing that he really thought of. Cause it became a calling card for him in TV.
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right. I don't know. I feel like I have never seen anyone else do this, at least not before Al.
But no, 84. 84 feels early for that bit.
It really does.
The only thing that I can think of, and it's not exactly the same, would probably be like Dickie Goodman. Right, like Dickie Goodman doing those like Mr. Jaws records where it's like he's doing an interview and it's all samples from famous songs as the responses.
We are here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it?
Dynamite!
And what did she say when you grabbed her?
Please, Mr. Please.
I know sharks are stupid, but what did you think when you took that first bite?
How sweet it is.
Mr. Jaws, before you swim out to sea, have you anything else to say?
Which he does a little bit of that, actually. The Boy George interview is strictly okay in my book in this one, but what I felt was more of a precursor to what his interview edits would eventually become is him asking Billy Idol who his favorite Stooges, and it cuts to him doing the mo mo mo
mo mo mo.
I love that.
I was like, yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that is very good. Like, yeah, that was something he filed away and went back to a bunch of times. Yeah, no, it is true, because you're right. It's a good point. These two episodes, the first one is Boy George, and then the second one is Adam Ant.
Right. Which I think the Adam Ant one has better bits in it, though.
It has
the
better Adam bits, but you can definitely tell in both of these that this is like, it's one of those, again, it's a proof of concept, kind of. Like, he's trying it out. This is clearly a good idea, and I think he knows. But boy, do these get so much funnier and better as they go along down there. Like, these are almost too straight in so many ways. Like, he's almost not being absurd enough with the concept in these. Like, the Adamant one is funnier, and it's wild to me that he did Adamant. Like, there's a lot of references in these as well that blow my mind just because of the time period. Like, it's crazy hearing Al talk about very 80s specific things that does not get, you know, that do not get mentioned so much anymore, like Adam Ant or Marshall Crenshaw. And like,
let's wrap up episode one real quick. The only other thing that I had written down, it's a classic bit. It's definitely not something Al created, but it's one that will always make me laugh, is the whole Michael Jackson video premiere bit, where it's just him slowly just damaging this footage, trying to get it to play. It's like, it's so classically funny. Like,
yeah, that is great. I mean, you see it coming a mile away, but it's still very satisfying to watch. Like, here we have the one copy they sent us to premiere. And of course, he drops it, and while trying to fix it, for some reason, he's eating pizza simultaneously.
But I loved the agent doing the music video.
That's in part two.
Oh, is that episode
we'll
two?
We'll get into that.
We got to get to that, but that's gold.
Okay, that's melded together. Okay, great.
Another reference. The thing that made me laugh the most in episode one was, I think it's a shot from the Owner of a Lonely Heart video, which also, side note, I thought was interesting. He references that, and then that appears in a polka on
the
next
year,
record.
Yes.
He winds up putting that into a polka.
He also makes the girls just want to have fun joke.
Yes,
which
there's a few references here of things that then come down later on. Yeah.
That's funny.
But I think it's that video where it's someone sliding down a ladder. Like, that happens in the video, and he was like, we have an outtake. Like, apparently on the first take, they didn't, like, grease the ladder properly, and it cuts to him doing it again, and he just, the sound effect laid in on top of him just going, like, screaming in pain while sliding down the ladder. Like, that got a genuine LOL out of me. I loved that.
I even laughed at I don't even know what the David Bowie music video is he's talking about, but it's like, oh, look at him getting those fashion critics in there, and he just, like, dubs in the sound as they're, like, stomping on stuff, being like, ugh.
Yeah, it was so
good. Yeah, all the wacky sound effects on top of the videos are just, all of those are so good.
He did a bit in each episode where he goes, I love that thing. And it's like, well, the first episode is where he's like the guy doing this on his arm.
Oh, yeah.
Play that again. Like, he's obsessed with something that is meaningless.
I actually wrote down for part two. Man, he's already repeating a lot of bits.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of bits repeat in episode two, but I do love that so much. Can we watch it again? Can we watch it? They're telling me we got to move on. Like,
so
again, that's great, 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 great comedy.
We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Laurie, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. I'm Shane O'Hare of the Geekscape Games Podcast, the number one video game podcast on the Geekscape.network. Join myself, Derek Krennevelt, and a guest every fortnight as we discuss video game news, video game reviews, and dissections. That's Geekscape Games every 2 weeks on Geekscape.net.
So a little bit of a wizard behind the curtain for the people listening to Weird Algorithm. In my original plan, we were going to do Al TV Volume 1, and then we were going to talk about a deep cut, hard to find Weird Al track, and then we would do Volume 2. And the deep cut Al track, according to the Al Wikipedia, was a song called I Guess That's Why They Call It the Zoo, which was a parody of I Guess That's Why They Call It the Blues. Then I came to find out that this deep cut Al track is that he has sang just that line with no additional lyrics at concerts. So here is my 1 second mention that apparently, according to Weird Al's Wikipedia pages, there's a song called I Guess That's Why They Call It the Zoo that was important enough to get its own page.
He just did that? He didn't like name a single zoo animal or
nope.
Anything?
Nope.
Wow.
So now that that's all right. Out of the way, Al TV number two.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I have one more note about episode one. There's that brief moment where he brings out the manualist, the guy who does the hand farts.
Yes.
Who I think is the actual guy who does it on his records.
I don't know his name.
I feel like I should. But he is definitely the same guy who pops up many years later in the music video for Headline News.
Okay. Then, yeah, it's probably his guy.
That is the first time I have seen him in any of these things. He's appeared on records. Again, I'm assuming it's the same guy. But as soon as I saw his face, suddenly I had a flashback to that video. I'm like, oh, my God, that is definitely the same dude.
I tried really hard to find who these actors were. I did a big IMDb dive, and I could not find a lot of these people.
This is going into episode two a little bit, but the person who pops up who says his name is Mr. Ferguson, who just screams like a maniac at the camera. He's like, it's me, Mr. Ferguson. He just kind of yells like a lunatic.
He's
and
like,
goes
naked
away.
Ladies. Like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, naked ladies. Like, he looked, the first thing I thought, because his face is painted a little bit, he looked like Tom Kenny.
I thought he did that for a second, too. Yeah.
But for a second, I was like, holy shit, did Al get Tom Kenny in the 80s to do this? Because it's not impossible.
Wouldn't have been crazy. No,
but I'm pretty sure it's not him.
The commercial for cigarettes, too, I thought was Tom Kenny.
Yeah.
We also, I mean, we'll brush past it real quick, but in episode one, there's a bunch of different coffee commercials that remind me how, as a child, I really thought coffee affected people much differently than it actually turns out to affect people.
Yeah, it was funny. It does seem like Al did not like coffee at this point. He is really, like, taking... coffee drinkers are taking a beating in this episode.
So... episode two, we got to dive into it because Patrick already called it out. This State of Shock music video, it's so long, but so funny for all like 3.5 minutes.
Honestly, without a doubt, the best laugh I had of the entire time watching this.
It's a full sketch.
Oh my God. The setup of him being like, we have the video, and then it cuts to the guy. I honestly thought that the YouTube stream I was watching had an old commercial still edited in. Because it's this guy talking on the phone, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I gotta go. And he puts the phone down, and he just starts singing State of Shock while doing his own ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
They told me I should read this letter before I play it. Dear Al, hope you enjoy the new State of Shock video. We here at Epic Records consider it a great privilege that you are world premiering it on Al TV. We did have a problem, however. We couldn't get Mick Jagger or Michael Jackson to appear in the video. But we wanted a video real bad, so we just did the best we could. Yours truly, Harvey Leeds Epic Records. Da 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 da. You gotta be mine, da 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 da. You're just so fine, da 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 da. I like your style, da 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 da. It makes me wild, da 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 da.
And then, as soon as he does that, the Chiron appears at the bottom corner of the video. Like, that is.
What was his name? What did the agent say?
Harvey Leeds.
Harvey Leeds.
It was so him. I was like, I cannot believe this is still on. Like in any other circumstance, they would get to the first chorus and then that would be the end of it. But they do the whole song, single shot, no cuts.
Smoke he coming out of the nowhere. Drum beat. Yeah, he starts the drum beat at one point, and then the smoke machine turns on, and then the lights kind of go to red. It's like they forgot, like they're making the video as it goes. Honestly, for people watching this, like it, you have to watch that. For That's if you're going to watch any part of this, that is so good.
I know that we've talked about this before on this show, Matt, but like that moment, that specific moment, I could imagine in New York City. Like a young Thomas Lennon, Ken Marino, Michael Showalter, all watching that and being like, that's what sketch comedy is. And like,
honestly,
a decade later, like, getting to do The State and just being like, this is what we want to do. We want to do what Al TV's been doing for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is amazing how like absurdist and oddball these little sketch comedy moments he is making are in this. Like, it's really, really something. That one is crazy. Because again, obviously, Saturday Night Live existed at this point. It's not like there was no... There is sketch comedy out there in the world, but this is really absurd and really, really far out there. Like, it has more in common with, like you just said, things like The State or Mr. Show or any of that kind of stuff that came years later.
And it takes a step away from his voice in a way, which is... I always see his voice is like a direct one-to-one parody. It's like, this is Al's version of MTV. This is Al's version of, you know, like... whatever, like
Madonna,
a virgin,
Nirvana.
You know what I mean? Like, it's everything. It's like, it's Al's, like, so it's like, this one was like a lead up with a premise and a build to it that was like very specifically like a comedy sketch.
Yeah.
Was a departure from what he does. But I thought it was
especially because so much of it, even when he's throwing to other people, it still is Al's voice. You know, like he'll play a cassette tape and he's like, oh, here's like a rare recording of the audition of a thing, but it's just Al's voice on the tape. Like, this is legitimately, he came up with an idea and assigned someone else to film it for him.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
I mean, it almost sucks that it's so early because it makes the next like 30 minutes hard to even compare it to.
It does.
Peak.
It does. But like, I was going to say, watching this also, like, you really, at least when I was watching it, I was like, this really does now feel like the prototype for what became UHF. He is, the way that he's hitting these little sketches and bringing in people, like that bit with him making the music video is so UHF. It's so easy to envision, like, oh, we're going to cut to this guy and it's someone doing some ridiculous bit just apropos of nothing. And then it's back to Al, like, okay, great. Well, thanks for that. Like, that's so, like, it was wild to see. I never thought of it through that lens before this.
Speaking of the UHF thing, the other thing I wrote down is that this does the Weird Al When Doves Cry parody 5 years before the UHF music video, but nails it even better because it's that long buildup and then the immediate music drop as he takes the robe and just goes, thank you. Like, completely killing the tension.
I loved that. That was so funny.
I felt like part two had points that were so much better than part one, but I feel like I also took way less notes than I did for part two.
Yeah, like you said, it hits a lot of the same beats, so it does a lot of the same bits as the first one does, but it does most of them a little bit better.
I'm curious to see how many Al TVs he does the same Jerry Lewis joke.
The same Jerry Lewis joke.
I love the Jerry Lewis
joke. Nice lady. Like, I want that to be still happening in the 90s. Like, I want us to be like, just constantly getting to the same punchline.
That absolutely killed me.
Yeah, I do love, and it was funny because we talked about it a little bit earlier, like the sort of cringiness of the contest, the one night stand with Al, that comes back in this a little bit, but he literally does the one night stand joke and picks a winner and names her by name, Trixie Hazy, who he says is the winner of the contest, who's going to come over and again in a in a currently problematic turn of phrase, says that they're going to drink blueberry daiquiris and then see what happens,
yeah.
Which is pretty tough.
Pretty tough. But I also like the bit that he draws one name first and goes,
I love,
nah.
He pokes at name. He's like, and the winner is, nah, throws it away and then picks another. Well,
I think too, like, I mean, the angle that he's going with, probably I would say if he were to defend himself in the 80s, being like, what's funny about this is I'm a loser. And
yes.
So I suck and I'm lame. And so what's funny about this is like this would, you know,
totally
would never happen.
And he is doing a parody of a thing that MTV used to do constantly back then, these types of contests and giveaways with kind of bizarre prizes. And
I think we've talked about the Little Pink Houses one, which is my
absolute
favorite one. We have
talked about the Little Pink Houses thing. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Pink Houses?
No, not at all. What is that? Yeah.
It's our little dream house, the MTV Party House. You win it. You own it. Like it or not, it's smack in the middle of the heartland. Bloomington, Indiana, hometown of John Cougar Mellencamp. And oh yeah, you have to paint it pink.
Little Pink House, yeah.
You can be the grand prize winner and proud owner of the world's first rock and roll estate. And we'll even throw in a housewarming party. Just call up 25 of the wrong people and we'll fly everybody in for the weekend. John Cougar Mellencamp is your barbecue chairman. And later that night...
The house band's going to be me, and I'm going to be playing right in your brand new living room.
Even later, there's a private screening of Universal's new movie, Streets of Fire.
That's crazy.
It was insane.
The tax implications alone are staggering. It's like, what a nightmare contest to win. No. It's a huge burden to win this contest. I really think, like you said, it's two things. I think he's making fun of the whole idea of it and the fact that he's the dorky guy. And it's like, you win a weekend with me. Like, that's the joke. And I totally get that that's the joke. It's just some of the phrasing that he uses is just like, in a million years, no one would say it that way now. It's just little too far.
The other thing that's kind of crazy to think about is that this one is September 3rd, 1984, right? So we're looking six-ish months since the first LTV. There are so many callbacks to a thing that happened 6 months ago that is like really putting a lot of hope and faith that his audience loyally remembered these previous bits.
It's interesting because this also was like, you're counting on people to remember the bits, but also it kind of works because this is a time period, I mean, as evidenced by this video quality, no one really was thinking about people watching this again. It was a one-shot deal. He did this, and it was over. Like, there was no re-airing LTV. Like, he never thought it was going to be archived and revisited. This was like, oh, that went pretty well. Let's do it again, and hitting those same marks again. It's like, how many people are going to watch it twice? If they watch it twice, they're going to get the callback. If they don't, the joke worked the first time, it'll work again the second time.
Right. That's how it felt to me, where he was like, I don't know. Or my thought was like, if they greenlit it for like, you'll do April Fool's Day because we're a new network, we're trying shit out. If we're not playing you, we're playing music videos, and that's about it right now. If they were like, oh, that was fun, we have some more space in September, we'll just give you another one. And then they kept kind of doing that. That's kind of how it felt to me, where it's like, well, this is pretty low res. There's not a lot of stuff for us to do. We don't really have to, you know, he has his thing and he'll go write an hour and fill an hour. And that's something I miss. I miss kinds of shows like this where people fill an hour. I guess they're podcasts now, to be honest. But like,
it's true.
Just being on TV and just being like, well, we're here and we have an hour and we're doing this. Like, I miss
We've got an hour. What are we going to do? What should we do? Yeah, I totally agree with you. Totally
I loved the pace of those kinds of shows. And it was so comforting to watch those.
Yeah.
I was trying to see if there was never a consistent date. Because like April 1st makes the most sense. Here's the weirdest one. Well, not the weirdest one, but the most on the nose one beyond April 1st is ALTV 5 was aired on April 20th, 1988, which, I mean, was 420 a thing in 1988 to the point that they're like, this is what those stoners are going to be watching at midnight on
MTV. That's a great question, Matt. I have no idea. The origins of 420, I don't know.
But there's, because I was like, maybe like September, I don't know what September 3rd's importance was for it. And I was like, maybe, when's Al's birthday? Like, I was like trying to figure out anything to explain it.
I'm looking at this episode list right now too on Wikipedia. Like LTV won this April 1st, 1984, 4 hours. So we're watching like 1 hour of it. I didn't realize he was doing 4 hours and then 4 hours and then four. Like the first three episodes
4 hours.
Or 4 hours of this.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, whoever cut these together presumably tried to get as much of the actual meat of what he was doing.
Right.
Because there probably was huge sections where they just showed videos and cut to commercials and stuff. And then he would come back as like a VJ. Like, there probably is some stuff that's missing here, but I'm sure whoever did it was like trying to grab anything that was like of enough value.
Totally.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Another thing from episode two that I had forgotten about, I just saw in my notes, is I like the recurring bit about the solar powered gadgets that you wear on your head.
Dude, the blender that. Commercial.
The infomercial, the solar powered helmet, and then the solar powered blender.
The deprivation tank helmet.
The solar powered sensory deprivation tank. But my favorite thing about each one is at the end is like, it's great, it does everything you need, and it won't make you look like a jerk. Every single one ends with that, like, or it's you won't look like a jerk wearing it. Like, just that is the final selling point. Every time that came up, I laughed again.
So good.
I do want to call out the Adam Ann interview. There was one line that, I mean, most of it got a pretty good chuckle out of me, but when he says, Adam, can you tell me what time it is? And he just goes, I think it's the 80s. And
I
was like,
I love that.
That's
good.
Like where you're
that
like,
good.
That's what I come to remember the interviews to be is the most absurd answer to a simple question using those interview clips.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, this is also something I noticed that I am embarrassed because I should know this and I don't. They show in this snippet the very end of the music video for the song Ghostbusters.
Yes.
And Al is in it. Is Al actually in the Ghostbusters video?
No.
Okay.
I honestly couldn't tell
because it seemed like at the end they were cutting just to random people like singing Ghostbusters. And for a moment I was like, I could believe that they put Al in this video as an actual cameo. He makes the joke of like, oh, that's a great video. I especially love the cameos. And I couldn't tell if it was just a joke for the show or if he actually was in that video.
Yeah, no. So the joke there, which I think is kind of an underwhelming joke because it was too long. I think he probably legitimately played the music video Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Because throughout the video, every time they yell Ghostbusters, they would cut to a different like SNL alum yelling Ghostbusters.
Yelling Ghostbusters.
But it looks like he just added himself to every single one of those in place of their caveats.
Right.
And in my mind, I'm almost like, but it just based on how this video was edited. So I could be wrong.
Yeah.
He could have done it throughout the entire video, which if that's the case, it's hilarious. The way that this is edited, it feels like
that.
It's
I wish that existed,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, like it looks like it's just added to the end, which it's like you either do it once or you do it the whole time. But like just doing it a couple times at the end doesn't really hit correctly to me, but not my favorite of the joke.
It's even interesting to think about, like, I feel like nowadays, if anyone was like, oh, I have this funny bit where I'm going to put myself into your music, like, I don't think you'd be allowed to do that. I feel like MTV now would be like, you can't change the music video for Ghostbusters and insert yourself into it as a joke. We're going to get sued completely.
Well,
like, there's no way.
We'll get to it, but I distinctly remember the bad hair day one specifically. All of the bumpers throughout that entire Al TV special is just the snippet of the alternative polka with the actual music video playing over top of it. So it'd be like Bullet with a Butterfly Wing, just sped up enough so that Billy Corgan's lips matched Al singing the Despite All My Rage. Like that was, so I know that he did continue to like fuck around with the music videos for the bumpers and stuff, but
yeah. And I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe it still would be fine. I just feel like I never see people do that nowadays.
Well, I never see people make music
videos
anymore.
This was a very like Wild West scenario. Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea of this at all is so archaic now. But him being allowed to like change the audio or video to a music video, even presenting like the State of Shock video is like, oh, here we have the new video. Like, it's obviously a joke, but truly, they tried to show it as if it was completely real. I was like, wow, I don't know. It just feels like nobody was asking for permission for anything in the process of making this. They're like, let's just do it and see what happens.
Well, this continues our theory that the first like 2 or 3 years of Weird Al, he is more punk rock than anybody playing at CBGBs.
Yeah,
definitely. Because it's just like him shitting on it. It's like, to me, it's like, it's the lens of like, you doing this thing makes you cool, but me doing this makes that thing lame, and I just ruined your thing. Like, I think that's like a thing he does where it's like, and I think it's fun and it's hilarious where he's like, this thing that everyone's obsessed with, I just made it dorky. And I think that's why I resonate with it so much, where it's like he reclaims these cool things and he makes you feel like, I don't know, he just like pokes fun at something that you didn't think you could. Like,
it's
I love him.
Yeah, totally.
You're right. It's like the taking the piss out of it element of like, it's so whenever I think of like punk, the idea of punk and the ethos of punk, like the example I always use is like, you know, the, hey, one hit wonder fun fact. Did you know like Chumbawamba is the most punk ass band that's ever existed? And people are like, the I get knocked down and I get up again band. And it's like, yeah, those dudes were like hardcore anarchistic punks who like when GM paid them $2 million to use one of their songs in a car commercial, they then reallocated the $2 million to a nonprofit to do a full examination on the business practices of GM. Like, that is like the most punk thing I could possibly imagine.
That's cool as hell.
Is using a company's money that they paid you to fuck over that company. Like, that is awesome.
Big time.
Like, that's kind of what Al's doing here, is that MTV's like, hey, this Eat It video is doing really well. Do you want to host the thing on April Fool's Day? And he's like, I hope you understand I'm going to spend 4 hours mocking what your channel stands for.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that bit too with the Paul is dead, where it was like it was Paul Simon and not Paul McCartney.
Dude, when he holds up the Abbey Road record and it's the shittiest taping of Paul Simon's head over Paul McCartney's face.
Like, I loved that. It was so funny.
He also at
and
the
I didn't
end
know
of that
conspiracy theory was that old either. I didn't know that has
oh,
been
oh yeah, that goes
80s.
Back a long, long time. Yeah,
oh,
that's
was
crazy.
As the Beatles were a band, I'm pretty sure the Paul is dead theory
I think
was
it goes
already
back
happening.
That far, yeah.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that is like, I think that's the end of episode one. And I love, it's just like a dumb little joke, but I love at the end of that, he's like, so on that note, rest in peace, Paul Simon. And I just know that wherever you are right now, you're probably watching Al TV. That's, again,
that.
Like such a great joke. Just a perfect joke. Excellent.
I love that. It's so good.
These were great. I'm excited to watch more of these in the coming episodes. Next week, we will be officially kicking off the Dare to Be Stupid tracks to discuss. But Patrick, you will certainly be back on the show in the future. But Please. In the meantime, where can people check out some of not just your comedy, but I mean, Smosh is massive.
It's like, it's pretty large. Yeah.
Heck yes.
You can go to YouTube. All of our stuff is on Smosh. I'm like the creative director of Sketch over there right now. So if you go to our main channel, there's a lot of videos I'm in on that as well. And then some other stuff that I do. I have an improvised like Hollywood roundtable podcast called Artists on Artists on Artists on Artists. And we just pick like a different topic every week and bullshit for an hour as agents or Foley artists or Guy Fieri's location scouts or whatever. You can check that out. I have a podcast called the Parrothead Podcast, and I'm on Radio Margaritaville talking about Jimmy Buffett all the time. And my Instagram is Patrick. That's 4 Patricks, and then Twitter on Patrick McDonald with a 0 instead of an O. And that's it.
I do have to ask, favorite Jimmy Buffett song?
Oh boy. I think, first of all, I want to say there's a lot of similarities between Weird Al and Jimmy Buffett, because Jimmy's trying to be funny a lot of the time. And I respect that a lot out of him. I
actually respect that Jimmy jumps from being really, really funny to like some of his songs are heartbreakingly beautiful at the same
time.
Yeah,
they're very sincere. He's very heartfelt, very thoughtful guy. I would say my favorite Jimmy Buffett song is probably like from the big ones, like Son of a Sailor. And then there's a deeper cut called 12 Volt Man that I love, which is very sweet and thoughtful.
Ooh, I love Son of a Sailor. I don't know 12 Volt Man. I'm going to look that up.
It's really good. He actually made an acoustic album last year during the pandemic where he just played a lot of his deep cuts on a guitar and like stripped it all down, and it's really good. So it's called Songs You Don't Know by Heart. So if you want to
I love that. That's
nice.
Hilarious. I also I don't know what it is. I don't like the ocean. I hate the ocean, to be honest. But for some reason, a pirate turns 40, like,
oh yeah,
gets me every time. Like, it's every great. Time I hear that song, I get choked up. It's a beautiful song.
I mean, I
song.
Think it's he's not trying to take himself too seriously. He's also just kind of like, if you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. And, you know,
yeah.
Everyone that says, like, I hate Jimmy Buffett, I'm like, okay.
Yeah. No, that Songs That You Know By Heart record is, like, one of the most perfect greatest hits records. Like,
oh, my God, it's incredible.
If you don't walk away from that at least a little bit of a fan, then yeah, you're probably never gonna like him. But
I know.
Yeah.
And he released his greatest hits album 30 years ago. That's insane to me. Like, it's like
that is very impressive.
It's nuts.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Patrick.
Yes, and thank you.
Guys, we'll be back to our rankings starting next week. Kicking off Dare to Be Stupid. Could it be our favorite album? Well, we'll find out in 3 or 4 years' time, I guess.
Oh my God. Yeah.
We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs.
Hey there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Lori, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include 7 best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs 2 of our hosts that have seen a show with 2 of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.